to episode of the Nintendo Rotation Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
It is hot. It is May. Loki, what do you have to say?
I can take care of you.
What?
God. I did not plan that. I seriously did not plan that.
Yeah, I wasn't waiting for the NSYNC, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, where is this rhyme going? Then I heard Loki. I'm like, what's the MCU got to do with it? And like, no, wrong Loki. Yeah. Also, Skullkit Scott's here. I'm not even going to do a banter here. I'm so annoyed by what Will just did. So, Scott, go with it.
Come on, I already did the main bit last
week.
Just
looking at all
that was the
rain.
Abridged version. I even told you last was the abridged version. This was the full version. You had one job. You went for fan service. So you sit in your corner and you wait there. Scott, talk.
I'm just excited that... Well, actually, I'm not excited. I'm just hoping the rain goes away. It's been raining all day today.
Oh, on the West Coast? Oh.
Yeah, who would have guessed?
Is that it?
Well, that and I'm still working on finding so many fish on Stellar Blade.
That's, I haven't that's unlocked you've been playing, Scott. I know you've been gone a week. Don't forget the order. There's an order to this.
Hey, I was dying last week. I'm sorry.
Right, you were feeling sick, I recall. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm feeling sick now, but I'm still here. You're welcome. For the record, I'm feeling much better than I was on one day. But that's another topic, starting with, what have you been playing? I'm pretty sure I've gone first the last few times, but I actually do have something to talk about this time. So, Will, why don't you go first?
So, like what Scott just said recently, I've been continuing on my trek on Stellar Blade. And, yeah, like, I mean, what is there to say regarding to this game? It is, like, if you check out the reviews already, it is definitely that Sekiro-lite. And it definitely, like, the one thing I really do appreciate about Stellar Blade is definitely the gameplay, if anything else. Because it is very fun. Once you get down that parry dance like in Sekiro, it is a very fun game. Like, some people basically call it kind of mid-gameplay, which, to some extent, yes. Because, like, the consensus of the reviews is basically, yes, the puzzles kind of drag things down a little bit to the small pace. But aside from that, once you're able to go and face off like, these impressive boss fights, they're actually pretty darn fun. Like, the parries, the combo systems. I mean, while simple as it is very fun. And like the story wise, it's post-apocalyptic. What do you expect? Of course, like Adam and Eve. There's definitely, religious context in regards to that. A lot of things in regards to like plot wise. I mean, not the most important thing, but it's something to keep the story going on as you trek through these worlds and apocalyptic settings. And shift up. I know this is kind of your bread and butter, but geez Louise, do you have to make everything so darn depressing? I know you have been doing this thing since Gods of Victory Nikkei with their stories, ending with your current 1.5 anniversary event. But geez Louise, man, you are really love the tragedy buff. You just love feeding us tragedy. And if you don't have to select for tragic, this may not be for you, but yeah, it is just full on tragic. I mean, you can clear it takes the cues from Yoko Taro and Nier's fame. So all that. But overall, Stellar Blade is just like, wow, it's clearly not a perfect game, but it's by far means it is definitely a good start to Shift Up's console game adventures, if anything else. It is just an absolutely fun time. And of course, again, Eve with all those mirror costumes. I mean, like, imagine in today's gaming industry, we can have about like, I don't know, more than 30 costumes for a character with no microtransactions. And we just basically play it right there and there. What a concept. And back in my day, we could also do the same thing. And I don't know, other games you have to pay a battle pass or something like that. And this thing more than is a full product. Who knew?
Wow, a game without having to pay more after you paid for the game. It's clearly a foreign concept. The gaming industry has never done that before. Never.
Not at all.
Definitely not. Not whole generations. You know, if you really think about it, and I know this is like really stretching it, wouldn't the first microtransaction technically be arcade games?
Like, I guess so.
I mean,
think about it.
Count for like extra lives,
extra lives, you know, and all that.
Continuing the game, you have to put in another quarter. But like, I know that's stretching, but it's just like.
Cabinet Machines has always been kind of a ripoff. I personally believe because again, they make it so unbelievably tough because they want to fish out the quarters. I mean, of course, they gotta fish, like fund the arcades, yada yada yada, and all that. They only want your money. So, I mean, sure, I guess in hindsight, it could be at the first microtransaction, but that's for an arcade cabinet. Like, you're only there for, like, a certain amount of time. You're not there buying the machine unless you bought a machine until...
If you bought a machine, don't give the machine your quarters.
Yeah. So, off on that. But, yeah, so finishing up with Stellar Blade. Again, Stellar Blade, great thing. The graphics, absolutely stunning. Of course, Eve is stunning, definitely, by all means. It's just an absolutely enjoyable time if you enjoy the game. So, yeah, Stellar Blade, definitely a good recommendation. Not perfect, but good. And of course, naturally, as you heard from the opening session, Faye has been treating me very kindly. So yes, I have managed to get a mythic hero Loki, or basically God form Loki. And surprise, thankfully, my polls were very kind. I got my first Loki in 15 polls. And I'm like, why not? I continue summoning, not to just my spark yet, but I actually got one more Loki as well. So I got my plus one merge. And so I'm thinking probably if I don't get her, Gugungagap yet, I probably just used my spark on her for that character. But yeah, this matter, yeah, it has been treating me kind. The RNGs have been good. And even with the recent Build Your Rapport event, yeah, I decided to go and pair myself with Emblem Ike. And oh, so much the adventures that I have gone through with Emblem Ike.
Shut up, Will.
Oh, what is happening, dear host? Like, are you wanting to spend time with your famed hero of legend?
Yes, Will, I do. But do recall that I have a blade from another famed legend that I will happily use on you if you keep taunting me like this. I know where you live. I know where you live, Will. I have your address. I have both of your addresses, actually. This is canon.
All right. I'll stop being Eggman for once. I'll stop being Eggman. Yeah. So thanks. Yeah. Fire Emblem Fates. Loki is definitely a top tier, a dark mythic unit. So if you want to go pull her, by all means, definitely try it out. And yeah, at the moment, it's just pretty much that game right now. Stellar Blade has been keeping my attention. Faye has been very kind, of course. And of course, at the moment right now, Nikki Goddess of Victory is, we're at the second part of the 1.5 anniversary event, which, yeah. Nikki, shift up, studio. Can I ask you one? I get it, you want to try to make money, but the fact you also put in not just one gacha skin costume, but you put in two gacha skin costumes in this thing. I get it, you want money, but geez Louise, you really tried to fish us, aren't you? I mean, but the second costume is, I mean, as a cultured guy, that's like, but geez Louise, dang, you're making a hard case. But okay, that's it. I'll be done. I'm good. Scott, you take the floor.
So my main two games, I guess I'll go with the one that you haven't heard yet for first, just because that one is a shorter one to talk about, but it is Toho's Mystia's Izakaya.
Oh, okay. I think I've heard that one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
you made that up.
You don't know Toho, sir.
So Toho, for those of you who don't know, there's like a whole Project Toho online thing where there's a ton of fan games made for this kind of a universe. And this is just another one of those games in that universe. Mostly geared around the character Mystia and her desire to be a successful host for an izakaya, or how some people would refer to it as a restaurant /bar.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, like basically, like think of it as a Diner Dash, but Japanese.
Yeah,
like
pretty that. Much. And so it has a lot of stuff, but I think my biggest issue was talking about how repetitive it is. You basically choose like 4 or 5 different dishes you can make each day. and you put that on the menu. Sometimes you'll get special customers that'll show up and ask you for like specific ones. You can do a different recipe or do something that you already have prepared, but just add different ingredients to it to make it to their liking, which is, I think, the more interesting part of it, is trying to make ingredients that are different or make recipes that are different and geared towards different people's palates.
Okay. So basically also doing the Diner Dash / bartender deal.
Yeah.
Izakayas. Okay.
So it's kind of like that. But the problem is there's not nearly enough special customers to warrant as much, because a lot of it is just going to be the average customers who will just want the basic things off the menu that are basically just a point and click, then give it to them, but kind of a deal.
Mm-mm.
So it gets super easy, but it also has really nice music, and it's just, it's definitely a game you just kind of vibe with. It's definitely not one you want to think too hard about. The only thing you really have to think about is like the resource management. There's every morning you wake up and you have to gather ingredients for your izakaya, and based on the ingredients you find is how you equals what kind of dishes you make. And it's based on like a timing mechanism where like you wake up at a certain time of the day and you have to basically gather ingredients until a different time of that day when you have to open up your izakaya and start creating the dishes.
Okay.
Or drinks, if you don't have someone to help you with the drinks. You can get partners in the form of different Toho characters who will help you with your izakaya. Most of them will just basically help you create drinks. Mm. Some are good at it and some people need help.
There's but, a problem in the world in general.
People yeah, need help. Much. Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the premise of the game. And it's fine. It's only like $20, though. So it's not
something
you need to worry about. It's not like a $60 game. It's pretty basic.
Mm-mm-mm.
But it's a nice basic, I think. If you are just wanting to be in a mood where you just want to listen to good music and do a game that doesn't require too much effort or too much processing in your mind, but you still want to feel like you're accomplishing something, it's definitely a game that you can try out.
It's something
a
like
lot of
more
the negative
of
reviews I were looking at were people just so bored of the game because they're like, I don't want to have to do this.
I mean, it's a casual game. Like, is a $20 game is a casual, basically manning an izakaya. Like, what we were expecting. I mean, aside from the Toho name, like, yeah, Toho has been great known for its music, and yeah, you're expecting something. I don't know, something AAA in a Toho project is like, come on, like,
good luck. When we get a AAA Toho game, then something's gonna be crazy. But yeah, the next game I've been playing has been Stellar Blade, and I have kind of been blazing through it. It's interesting when you first play like the demo and you get to like the first few hours of the game. It definitely feels like Sekiro Soulsborne type game
where things are
slow, and you have to get used to like combos and timing. And then when you start unlocking like different exoskeleton suits and you start getting different gear sockets and you can start like actually customizing your build, you can turn it into basically what like is like a Bayonetta or Nier Automata, where you just are super fast and everything's just like a different combo you get to work on. Mm-hmm. Where when you also can use like parries and dodges to be in your combo with like the different counter systems, and they even give you extra moves if you like dodge, but you didn't dodge perfectly, kind of a deal.
Right.
So you can keep different combos based on how well you dodge, which is kind of, I think, really cool. So yeah, the more things you unlock, the like different the experiences for you. Like if you look at some of the new Game Plus builds that are out there right now, there's people who are basically doing like 50 hit combos before the monster can even hit them, and it's just like, dang.
Yeah, like I love it when you like, especially with the burst abilities, basically like level 2 from your beta skills, and just like the fact like there's the usual your AoE specials, your like power, your installs supers, as well as again literal Virgil's Judgment Blade, like just flash blade everybody, which that's personally my favorite burst skill. Is like, yeah, that's what I really appreciate, like how much, I mean, very similar akin to like Devil May Cry, but on Bayonetta and all those likes, it's like it really opens up to like the different combo customizable combos of how you want to do. I mean, I'm used to basic skills, but yeah, it allows you like timing your attacks and all that. Yeah,
it's a trick, because like I've also been doing, well, I basically done all the side quests aside from some of the secret ones. And it's just because you can get outfits for it, but you can also get what are known as like Bitcoins, which help you get extra like Tumblr expansion modules and stuff once you get later on in the game. Which is really handy because that means you get extra potions. And having extra potions, when you get into a boss where you're trying to learn, you can actually take them down in your first try because you have enough potions where you have to figure out, oh, this is not when I should have dodged, or this is not when I should have parried.
Yeah. I'm not sure like how your general playthrough is, but personally for me, I just went, as the one guy here, I just went full on skin suit. I had no shield, so I did a much more difficult time. But surprisingly, it wasn't as too bad.
Will played the game in the skin suit variant. Wow!
He's getting rid of all of his armor, basically.
Wow, that's so unlike you, Will. I would never have called you doing that at all.
I've actually been really liking some of the dresses you find. Like, one of my favorites is like the black silk dress that you find later on in the game. That's what I've been using.
Again, props to Shift Up Studios for going to their costume designs. This is absolutely stunning, yes.
No, I think it's funny because whenever my wife gets home from work, I'll show her all like the new outfits I grab doing side quests, and there'll be somewhere she's just like, "Why is this in the game?" Because some people like it, and then there are other outfits where she's like, "I want it."
I like this. Okay, I know you like a BMW, but I like a Lamborghini.
So it's just like interesting because like they definitely have a design, like a designer for a designed outfit for like any type of gamer. Like, do you like the fashion? Do you want to have your character extremely sexified? There's an outfit for you too.
I mean, there's a literal teddy bear suit you can actually dress as Eve as. So yeah.
So that is still my wife's favorite.
You're welcome. Furries out there are covered.
Get the teddy bear outfit. Which is kind of depressing. That side quest also is entirely depressing. But, you know,
yeah, it is
all
just
the side quests basically end with the same thing of this person is either dead or dying.
Yeah, it is a lot of dread.
Especially some side quests that will be like extensions from earlier side quests. You're like, oh, this person was alive. This person was alive. And then you get to like the third part of that side quest. It's like, oh, they were alive until now.
Yeah, and the questioning of faith, like regarding to how you try to keep your faith, but no, like no, it got, like little god, the goddess has abandoned me, and like no, like it's basically no, the government is all conspiracy theories and all that, like those kind of stuff as well. So yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of subtext and world building they do just in like the side quests and in just like the premise of the people that you find, because you can find like just dead bodies randomly in the wild. Mm-hmm. That will give you memory sticks of like their last memories, because in this game everybody has a memory stick incorporated into it, which is for spoiler reasons I'm not going to say why, but just know that the memory sticks always give you like their last memory, their last thought, and it's usually either depressing or it will tell you something about the world.
Yes, exactly.
So it's good to get them all.
Or the third option, which I know is a bit literal in context, but I heard that by collecting them, you'll know where to stick it. I couldn't resist. I couldn't resist.
Right. Stick it straight into the mother sphere. Yeah, I've actually really enjoyed Stellar Blade. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of the fishing stuff, but I am still I might try to actually do it because I only need like 8 or 9 more to finish the entire fishing guide right now, but that was mainly because I'd catch the wrong fish trying to get the other side quest fish, though.
Because
there are side quests that will require you to get a specific fish once you get a bunch more like fishing stuff in the actual Zion area.
Okay. That part of it.
You'll see bulletin board side quests, and then you'll get side quests from the actual fishing guy that'll be like, yeah, can you give me this fish? I can't find it anywhere. And because you realize that you have to find it in a different area of the game that nobody wants to go to because it's infested by Nitibas and all that.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it's fun to like get there and just like, oh, this fish was there too. Like I was fishing for a halibut and I randomly got one of like the Hawaiian mahi-mahi fish. Ah. Like, what the heck is this doing here?
Okay.
I wasn't even trying to fish for this thing. I didn't even know why it was here. So I caught like 3 unique ones that one was even thinking was here by accident looking for a halibut. But I then caught the halibut. So also note that there are different areas to catch these fish. It's not just in the spot where the side quest tells you. I've accidentally caught a fish that I was looking for in a different area when I was supposed to fish at a different area, kind of a deal. It depends on your bait and what kinds of fish live in what waters, because there's a lot of secret areas of water in Stellar Blade. that you won't necessarily think are actually places you can fish until I accidentally, well, I didn't accidentally. I did try on just to see if I could, and I could.
Okay. I'll take that to know when I hit that. Once I unlock the fishing game,
The fishing stuff. But yeah, so I really enjoy Stellar Blade. I'm basically at the end of it right now. So I don't think you got to the big twist yet, Will, but there is some reasoning and lore of why everything is the way it is, which I'm really excited that they have a reason, because every time I read reviews, they're like, you know, the story sucks. The story didn't do this or anything. And it's just like, I feel like a lot of these people might either skip the cinematics, or they're just, what they mean to say is it's not as interesting as other game stories, because a lot more things can be more intricate, but it still has a story, and I still think it does its justice.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and that's also one quick feedback, because like ever since Stellar Blade has released it, like they have the dev team has basically put on their official Twitter account, but basically like they're thankful for all the reviews, feedback, and they said standby for updates and all that. And yeah, that's one quick critique I want to give to Stellar Blade. It's like, one, you can't pause cutscenes. I mean, like, you can skip them once you, like, we're going to a pre-battle boss fight,
yeah,
but you can't pause cutscenes. Somebody did not watch Sakurai's videos of pausing cutscenes. Come on. I don't know. Like, I had to cook something, boil water, whatever it may be, or pick up the mail. But no, you couldn't pause a freaking cutscene. Korea, please watch Sakurai's video, please.
More developers need to watch that videos. But yeah, I do think it's annoying you can't do that. But yeah, but that's basically what I've been playing this week and the week before.
All right. Well, for me, I was at a Comic-Con last weekend, and I've been like swamped with work from start to finish. So you might think that all I've played this week is Fae. And no, I didn't go and get Nurse Loki, because I have standards, Will. Yes, I do. But you would be wrong that I didn't play anything, because at C2E2, they had little gaming lounges. One of them was actually sponsored by my alma mater, DePaul, Go Blue Demons. And they had Smash Brothers there, they had Mario Kart there, they had Street Fighter, they had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I believe it was Shredder's Revenge.
Nice.
Yeah, I didn't get to play that one, sadly, but they had a Vampire Survivors, they had Splatoon going, so anytime I just had some downtime and I just wanted to relax, I just dropped in and played some Smash Brothers or Mario Kart, and I've got some good stories. First off, I am really good with Ike, I'm just saying. case in point, I went and was just playing by myself, no jokes, please. And this guy comes in and goes, hey, do you need a second? I'm like, yeah, sure, go ahead. So he pulls up Sephiroth. I'm like, oh, here we go. But not just any Sephiroth. He pulls out shirtless Sephiroth. I'm like, okay, that's a choice. And he quickly gets like 50% damage on me. Like, easily. It's a three-stock fight. And he gets a 50% on me, like, easily. I'm like, okay, this is going to be a beat down. Great. So I just start doing my thing. I get into my rhythm. I play how I know to play Ike, you know, hard hits, good counters, et cetera, et cetera. And he gets a kill on me. I immediately get a kill back on him. He gets a kill on me. I immediately get back a kill on him. So it's 1-1. I even joked, like, it doesn't matter if, you know, I kill you last if you kill me first. So he's laughing about that. And then we go into it and we go in for a clash and I kill him straight up. And it was like, oh, no. And I'm like, okay, well, you totally had me there, so let's do a rematch. And, you know, put $20 on it. No, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. I am not the late Paul Newman. I am not the hustler, though I could have been. Anyway, so we do a rematch. And this time around, because I know his strategies and how because I only played Sephiroth a few times, so I didn't really know his, like, gameplay strategy. I just easily worked a way around how he was playing, and then I just capitalized, and I, like, beat him, like, 3-1. So yeah, I'm pretty good. I like to think I'm pretty good. I have won a tournament as Ike before, and that is canon, ladies and gentlemen. So yeah, that was something. And then I played some Mario Kart. Now, this was a funny one. My friend Leia was also at the show, and she was not feeling well, but she came to join me in the gaming lounge. I'm like, hey, wanna play some Mario Kart? She goes, sure, I haven't played in a while. So we're looking for the courses to play. And I'm like, how about this one? She goes, oh, I've never done Rainbow Road on Deluxe before. I'm like, great, then that's what we'll do. So we're doing it at 100cc. You know, give it a little bit of a challenge, but not too much. I didn't want to overwhelm her because I know she hadn't played in a while. And so first three races, I dominate. Like, I easy first place. I am that good. You're welcome. I have beaten Will and Tyler in the past, despite what they tell you. I have beaten them. And so I get first place easily. We get to Rainbow Road, and I do not know what happened, but I went from first to seventh, and Leia went from, like, last to third. And I'm like, how does that happen? Like, I don't
know. You got carded.
I got carded.
You got carded.
I got carded. Like, I don't get it. Like, I've played Rainbow Road on, like, all the other ones. I've done fine. Granted, I hadn't played in a while, but it shouldn't have been that hard compared to all the other courses. And I just kept falling off. The grinding wasn't working when I was going on that level. And I just kept falling off. So I kept getting, like, further back. And then the power-ups I got never worked enough. And so I went from, like, three consecutive first place to, like, seventh. Thankfully, I still won, obviously. But I was just like, and then that was the one that she did good on. I was like, okay, sure, why not? And then on Sunday, this is, I won't tell you the whole story, but I'll give you the cliff notes. I decided I wanted to play a D&D adventure. They had a whole room set up for D&D at C2E2. It was there all 3 days.
Gosh.
Yeah. And they were supposed to do a special crossover with this brewery or something that was there. So, long story short, I ended up in the D&D room, and I was told, like, there was these one-off adventures that you could play in, like, an hour. 4 hours later, I'm still there, playing it with my five-person crew. I am a barbarian, obviously. Gotta rep Mama K when I can. Though, to be fair, I was a human barbarian, not a tiefling. But she was there with me in spirit. She was. I even rolled at one point to see if there was a Karlach I could flirt with. I didn't roll high enough, sadly. there was a hilarious flirting roll by another player, but that's another story for another time. I can't say it's too dirty. But you could put your own story together. But it was hilarious. It was fun. We did it for 4 hours. I actually didn't get to finish the campaign. We were at the boss fight, the final boss, and we were, like, really close to winning. But my character, because of its resistances, would not damage it. And I had to go because I was going to miss my train. I didn't, thankfully. But I wanted to make sure of that. So I was like, okay, look, I literally hit one of my teammates to save them from being charmed. Or they were charmed, and I saved them from that, so you're welcome. Who knew getting hit with a hammer will knock out any spell that is, you know, enchanting you? You're welcome. Then I used a potion to heal myself, so I was at max health at the end. And I did not get damaged in that campaign until the very end of the boss fight. I was that good, dang it. And I've never played a super long D&D campaign before. You're welcome, my friends. So yeah, that was fun. That was my first true D&D adventure that I had ever played. I had played loosely with some coworkers at Volition, but it was never like, we only did like 45 minutes. This was like, seriously, here's where you're at. Do this, do that. The Dungeon Master was great. I will tell you one story, though, that I broke the Dungeon Master. Here's how it happened. Basically, we were in the final boss fight. It's in the Underdark. For those who don't know, think of like a giant cave area with glowing mushrooms. That's all you need to know. And the Dungeon Master specifically said, okay, look, there's rocks everywhere. It's a flat surface between you and the bad guys. You know, no terrain to cross over. But there's rocks everywhere. There's stalagmites and stalactites. There's glowing mushrooms. It's, you know, a really creepy place, but, you know, it's where you're at. And so it gets to my turn. We're facing, like, this bug army. And I'm like, okay, look, you said there's stalactites on the ceiling, right? And he goes, yeah. And I go, well, I have a javelin. And I'm a barbarian with really good strength stats. Couldn't I just, like, throw my javelin at the stalactite and just use it to drop it on the bugs and squash them flat? And he looks at me and he goes, yeah, I guess you could. Like, it's stone and you got good strength, but that's like a javelin. You're going to need, like, roll really high to get that. And I'm like, oh, I could do that. So I grab my dice. I have my teammates do, like, some positive vibes and everything. And I roll a 19. Plus my modifier, so it's technically like a 25. And I literally squashed this giant beetle in half. It's literally like limping toward us, and we kill it the next round. I broke the Dungeon Master. He couldn't believe it. good times. Like, that's the writer in me. You say, oh, there's a slide tied on the ceiling. I'm like, great, I'll drop it on the books. What else am I going to do? I'm not going to go up to the bugs and try and hit it. That would be suicide. I'm a barbarian, not an idiot.
Intelligence wasn't the dump stat, huh?
No. I know. I think my number minus one was... Okay, it was... I did have minus one intelligence, but I think I also had minus one charisma, which is weird because I'm sure I could charm Karlach if I saw her. I'm just saying. But, yeah, it was a good show. I won't get into all that happened. I saw some great Nintendo cosplayers. I saw a lot of Byleths, actually, complete with the leggings. I want to know where they get the leggings. Like, I'm not saying that because I want to wear them. Clearly. No. That's... But, like, where would they buy that? Is like, would they get that from, like, Etsy or someone, like, custom makes them? Because, like, that's an intricate pattern.
Yeah.
Know? And you look at it and you go, oh, yeah, that's the Byleth pattern. You know, that's just how it is. But there was a lot of Byleths. I saw multiple Nintendo Fire Emblem characters. Let's see. Oh, I saw an Inkling, complete with weapon. I think it was the sniper rifle. I didn't get a picture because they were talking to somebody.
It wasn't the Splat Dualies? No.
No! Or the roller?
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, you have to make that carefully so it wouldn't be like a pain to lug around. But yeah, lots of good cosplays there. And I'm sure there were some Nintendo representatives in the World Championship of Cosplay, which was hosted by Yaya Han, who I did not get to meet because I didn't realize her booth was right across from a place I was at multiple times during the week. That was me being me, not being observant. My father would be so proud. So I did meet some cool people there. I got to meet the Icon Sting, wrestling legend. Didn't get to talk to him, sadly, that much, but it was still cool. I got to see a lot of cool people in Artist Alley. Lots of talented artists there, including some various artists who did Nintendo characters, because why not? Why not? Like, I was never a Prince guy, but if I had the space, I would totally just have, like, a wall dedicated to really cool Nintendo art.
That would be cool.
I know, right? But just, I don't have the room, and I'm not just going to put them in a folder that I occasionally flip through.
Nah.
That's a waste of money in my mind. And some people, like, they have the space to hang them everywhere, and I dig that. I don't. So, sadly, I did not buy anything for myself. Outside of meeting the wrestling people, that was, but... Yeah, I mean, that's technically a gift for me, I suppose. I got to do better at this. I brought a bunch of money to the con, and I was like, I'm going to spend this, and not like I didn't. I bought food, I bought taxi rides, I bought Sting and the other wrestler beforehand, so that doesn't count. But yeah, I'm a terrible con goer nowadays, guys. It's bad. Like, I used to be like, oh, I got to buy that, and then I did. That's how I got my Master Sword, my Hylian Shield, my Ocarina, and certain other things I can't recall for some reason. Last year, I wanted to buy something. I wanted to buy this massive Darkseid statue. Like Zack Snyder's Justice League Darkseid. Him on the throne, leaning on his hand. It was gorgeous. And it was $1,000.
Oh, jeez.
I was like, I want it, and I would find a place to have it, but God, that would be pain to lug home.
Exactly.
And $1,000.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, sheesh.
I mean, it looks nice, but yeah, like what the figures that go for 1K is like, holy moly.
Yeah. And for Will, not only were there plenty of art of his type, but there was a series of Street Fighter statues I think you would be interested in. Not because you're the biggest Street Fighter fan. That's actually more of Keith's domain.
I take it you're going to nerd-sized PCS figurines. I take it you're talking about.
I have no idea what you just said.
Like, yeah, because I know it won't be, I think I know exactly what the figure is because they also posted
it.
Just
say it, Will. Stop going around the bush.
Is it regarding to the whole squats of Cammy? Is that
yes!
One?
Yes! That's exactly what it was. But it wasn't just Cammy, it was also Chun-Li.
Yeah, but, yeah, the variants and all that.
But yeah.
PCS has been definitely is known to collab with like the artists with I think Edwin Hunt, Iron Pinky, as well as the other ones. So yeah, they've been making the rounds.
But yeah, they were exactly as fan servicey as you can imagine. And I'm like, that looks like Cammy, but that can't be Cammy. Why would Cammy be doing squats like this? I'm like, no, it's that kind of statue. Oh, okay. And then I saw Chun-Li, and I'm like, I mean, I get it, I guess, but you know.
She
no.
gotta get those thighs somehow, man. She's gotta get those thighs somehow.
If it sells, it will be made.
Yeah. I mean, I just think like that she should just pull a Zangief and crush a man's skull with her thighs, which we know she could do.
Please, if anything else you want, call that to crush a skull with her thighs.
Yeah, I will make that sacrifice. I have always liked Chun-Li for platonic agreeable reasons, Will.
Right.
Right. Honestly, I always liked her because her outfit was blue. It's just, I'm a man of simple tastes. Blue hair, blue outfit, Karlach. It's that simple.
I mean, Chun-Li's alpha, Street Fighter Alpha is definitely one of the classic looks. So, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, good times. And for all of you who went to C2E2, I hope you had a blast. It was a great three-day show. It's always good stuff. And I look forward to next year. All right. And now. We head to the news, because this news week went from very small to very large in about a day. And thus we got plenty to talk about. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. And first, have you ever noticed, gentlemen, that there's just too much ocean?
I mean, the world itself is 80%, so...
Yeah. So, yeah, for the record, we're not going geography or composition on you. We're actually talking about Endless Ocean Luminous, which, if you recall, is a Nintendo Switch exclusive that they announced during the Partners Direct earlier this year. And we were so excited about it.
Yeah, we all talked about it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, by the glorious reviews that we expect it to be. Yes.
So... Metacritic score and other main reviews came out. So the game itself is actually not doing too bad on Metacritic. It's got a 72.
Wait, hold on.
That's not right. Okay, sorry, I clicked on the wrong one. I clicked on the original. The original for the Wii had a 72. Okay, first of all, you ported a Wii game? Really? And yet we still aren't getting Xenoblade Chronicles X. Where is Xenoblade Chronicles X?
We're drowning out here.
Yes, we are. A watery grave. All right. Seriously, though. Endless Ocean Luminous has a 63 on Metacritic, which is, not the best.
Meh.
Not the best. A lot of mixed reviews, some bad ones. And one of those bad ones was from IGN, which gave it a 7.8 too much ocean. No, it didn't.
I wish that was what it was.
I wish.
They missed it. I saw so many people commenting on it. Like, that was the joke. 7.8 too much ocean. You had one job, IGN. This was goldmine. No one would have cared about the actual score if you had made the joke, but you didn't. You just gave it a 4 and moved on. What is wrong with you? It was right there.
Yeah, IGN, you couldn't capitalize on the meme that you personally made. Oh, you just want to go for your quote-unquote integrity as your reveal. But really, come on. You couldn't have some fun. Apparently no fun allowed. Blech.
Yeah, so... Look, no one asked for this game. Let's just be blunt about this. No one asked for the game. No one needed it.
It is, again, as we said many times over about this game, it is a very niche game. If you want something that is very comfy, very, heavily casual, just want to go and check some sea life and all that, by all means, this is that's your preference. Like, I don't know. If it's, very deep in the bargain bin, maybe I'll check it out. But if at the moment right now, it's just okay, I just, checking out some sea life and all that. Can I put in my custom soundtrack or, I don't know, something of that sort? If it allowed me to play my own personal music, probably that would be much more better. But, yeah, swimming around the ocean, I'll just play Abzu or something like that. I'm sorry, that Ginkgo Abzu is probably better for me.
yeah, so... It's the lowest rated game in the series, and I mean it was never the biggest series to begin with, but
no.
This was hey, we're making Endless Ocean Luminous. Remember, that's how they ended the Partners Direct.
Right.
This was the big game, and it's no. It's not. But yeah, I don't know. So if you get it, have fun. I guess.
You do you.
Exactly. You do you. Whatever makes you happy. What makes me happy is that Universal Studios Orlando is showing off what Super Nintendo World will be like when they get there. How's that for a segue?
Works.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm the host. no joke. They actually did drop a massive, minute 30 plus video showing off what their version of Super Nintendo World will look like when it comes to Universal Studios in 2025. Obviously, the one in Hollywood's already made, and Kyoto's been up for years, but this is the one that many people are excited about because it's in Florida. Because Florida's such a great place. Such a great place, yeah. So we need Nintendo to, you know, raise it from the depths of the watery grave it's slowly sinking into. You all know it's true. And if you don't, you're part of the problem.
And if it sinks, then Nintendo can just bank on Endless Ocean.
The Endless Ocean extension of the park. There you go. So what's cool about this isn't just that they're, you know, giving you a real tour of the place in case you've never been to the one in Hollywood or seen the one in Kyoto, but they also give the first really great look at the Donkey Kong Park. Remember, that's coming later this year to Japan and I guess for California and Florida in 2025. And they showed off there's going to be a Funky's plane. There's going to be, what was it, the Bubbly Barrel. I guess that's the restaurant we're going to get to eat at. Then there's the Minecart Madness.
Good times. Not.
Yeah. Well, they said that apparently the ride is going to make you feel like you're actually jumping the rails, but you're not. So I wonder how well they're actually going to nail that effect, because like that's half the thrill of the minecart sections is, you know, am I going to hit the rail?
Yep.
So we shall see. But definitely go check that out. They even have a special guided tour kind of thing on their website where you can get details on the various places you can go in both sections of the park. So again, that's coming. The Orlando Park is opening in 2025. It's part of their Epic Universe kind of deal that their rebrand, I'm going to guess they're going to call it. It'll go along with like Harry Potter World and all the other things that they're apparently setting up in the Universal Studios. I keep wanting to say USJ, but that's Japan. I loved when they made that joke in My Hero Academia. It's like, we're the USJ, like, but that's Universal Studios Japan. No, it's not! Season 1, look it up. Alright. So far, we've talked about a badly reviewed game, the hope of the future with this theme park. But what if there is no future to have, ladies and gentlemen? That sounds dark, I grant you. But that is the topic of the next Splatfest. This is real.
From fluffiness, from the fluffiness of cute animals to the possible end of the world. Bye.
Yeah. So imagine waking up and hearing, oh, the next Splatfest is announced. Gee, I wonder what topic is going to be. And then you look at the art and you can't really tell what it is just by the pictures. And then you see, what would you do at the world's end? Huh.
Well, cry was not an option. No. Yes.
And, well, I believe if Simon Pegg was here, he would say drink. Get it? That's a deep cut. I acknowledge. It's a deep cut. All right. It's a thing. It's a movie. Look it up. But yes, the next Splatfest topic is asking you, the person at home, what are you going to do if you found out the world is going to end? Okay, we got to make it clear about this. They're clearly implying it in the context that you know the world is going to end. And you have a little time before its destruction. Because obviously, if the world's about to end, like within seconds, you don't have time to do anything.
No.
All right. So let's say you have, we'll be generous here, a month. A month before the world ends. Like you somehow know. All right. Like 2012. Remember 2012? That was a year.
I do.
Yeah. Remember when we thought that was going to be the worst year ever? Oh.
How naive we were.
We were so innocent.
We were so young to be so jaded. Oh, man. If we only knew. But yeah, so you have a month left in your life, let's just say. The world is going to end. What are you going to do in like your last 30 days? Will you A, do the, quote, same old? Will you B, go and fulfill as much of your bucket list as possible? Or C, will you put on your Superman cape and try to save the day?
This is definitely going to be an interesting topic. Like, I know, as you said, we have been having so many random topics from, like, yeah, the weekend to fluffiness, now to the possible end of the world and what you want to do. Like, yes, and when I saw this topic, again, that one future line from Scruffy, like, Scruffy's going to die the way he lived. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we just got off from a very good anime season of Zob 100, A Bucket List of the Dead, which, yeah, good way to live your life. It's like, even in a zombie apocalypse, you want to go and fill out your bucket list. So that's a good thing. Or be a big man and, yeah, be a big man and try to save anybody and save the world. It's
destroy the zombie threat.
Yeah, and like, if by some miracle, if Fry actually pulls to a miracle victory off and actually the bucket list actually wins, that would be something. But as I said before many times over, Fry is forever cursed. So it's either really between Shiver or doing same old, because again, we humans suck.
We really do.
And like, we were just lazy bums as heck. So yeah, same old, so Scruffy's gonna die the way he lived. So, or I don't know, there'll be those who want to be the big man. So this topic, I sincerely do hope that Fry wins an upset for once before, I don't know, the possible final Splatfest, because Fry, you need a victory, and the Fry players, they gotta get some skill, you gotta show up your skills, because it is just sad to see Fry only won one victory, and I believe that's Team Sweet here in the States.
Scott,
I'm just surprised Cry is not on there, because that's absolutely the first thing that I think of to do. But, you know.
Yep. I would too.
Odds are I would probably either do the same old, or the bucket list, just because if I tried to save the day, I would be doomed.
Nah. Yep. I agree.
I'm the person you expect to save the day, I got some bad news for you.
Yeah, like, I pretty much take that song from Scrubs. I'm no Superman.
Yeah, I didn't want to get depressed today. Work eventually did that to me, but that's called being an adult, apparently. This is one of those topics where you're really getting a snapshot into the psyche of the universe. And I don't need that in my Splatfests. Like, you know, with the other ones, like even like the fluffy ones, like that was weird, but it was, you know, kind of funny. Or like the keyboard, the guitar one, or even chocolate or whatever, you know. But when I saw that one of the options for what do you want to do, what would you do with the world's end, is quote same old, and it just shows a octoling, inkling, whatever you want to call them, squid, just relaxing on a chair. Like sighing, I'm going to presume. I'm like, you don't think that plenty of people in the world are going to do that? I mean, like you said it before, well, like the human race sucks and like we're depressing and all that. But like that is what people are going to do. They're going to be like, mm-hmm. Well, the world's going to end. Nothing I can do about it. So they're just going to like, you know, binge all their shows, you know, just have their same meals and whatever. And then, like, the bucket list one, you know, I would feel that people would try to do that, but then you also have to consider that pretty much everyone in the world is going to try and do that, right? So, like, everyone's going to go to Paris, everyone's going to go to Tokyo or Italy or, you know, see the Northern Lights or whatever. Not to mention the madness of trying to travel around in a world where the world knows it's going to end. You know, you really think that planes are going to be operating at the same capacity or whatever? And... you know, that kind of gets nixed right off the bat, unless you're doing like some very grounded stuff, like, you know, build a snowman, or I'm finally going to ask that girl out at the end of the world. You know, and you can't say no to me at the end of the world, because that's where we're at.
Again, Zom 100 Bucket List of the Dead is a perfect example of the situation, exactly. Yep. So, yeah. Yes.
And then there's the whole save the day thing. Look, I understand. I know, yes, I am analyzing this way too deeply. I do not care. I get the concept here is like, you know, there would be people who try to save the day, but that also implies that there is something to save. All right. Like, for example, if it's a media that's trying to kill us, there's only so many things we could do within a month's time. And honestly, if a meteor was to hit the Earth, we're screwed. That's just canon. I would know. I actually know people who are actually the ones you would call for this situation. It would not end well. Or what happens if it's like a geological thing from like the inside of the Earth? Like the Earth is just going to die out from the inside, like massive earthquakes, or the Earth's core is going to go cold or something like that. You know, we can't stop that. We can't stop that in a month. And of course, there's like the whole alien invasion. Let's just be honest. The aliens are going to probe us and just be done with us. Let's just be honest here. Really? Nothing for the probe joke? Fine. But yeah, we're screwed. So if these are my options, like, seriously, the only one that actually feels fair is same old, which is dang depressing.
Yes.
Because, honestly, I do have a bucket list. It's very, very small. But, like, would I be able to complete it in the last month? I don't know. I'm definitely, although I like to think of myself as a person who will help people in time of need, I can't save the whole dang planet. So if my options of this is to just stay in my apartment or be with my family for the next 30 days and just, you know, have as many good times before the world ends, that's probably what I'm going to do. And that's just dang depressing, dang it. Right? Why are you doing this to us, Splatoon? And just to recall here, this is not the last Splatfest.
Right, no. But it's not like it could be, yes. I mean, we're probably approaching that, like, the eventual final fest as well, Splatoon 3's life cycle, obviously until the next system, but yeah. The context is definitely just absolutely random. And this hard-hitting philosophical topic is like, jeez, great, another depressing one. I mean, it's bad enough that money won over love. So, yeah, I'm still, yeah.
So, yeah. Like, dang it, Nintendo. Why? I mean, it was one thing, it was like Order versus Chaos, because, like, okay, this is Final Splatfest, you know, this is like the whole, this is good. We didn't overly think about it because, you know, who cares about Order versus Chaos? This is the gosh dang end of the world. You're asking us if we're going to just be ourselves, be our best selves, or be our heroic selves, like the fork.
I mean, just remember, if you invest in the Splatoon lore, we are, it is technically an apocalyptic setting in a
it's
sense.
It is a world that ended and then restarted with, you know, sea creatures and a bear. One bear. And cats. Two cats.
Yes, read the lore, read the sunken scrolls. That is true.
Yeah.
So you would choose the bear.
If I could bear it. Oh, that gets the laugh. Thanks, guys. Alright, next up, the Zelda movie. Yes, Wes Ball, who is the director, keeps giving small teases about what the movie could or might not be like. Okay. And the biggest question that I have personally asked on the podcast, and others have definitely asked, is, will Link talk in the movie? Well, he didn't say. Here's what he said. He goes, quote, A, B, or C. I'll just have it like the game. You can have a little dialogue boxes pop up in the movie, and you can pick the one you want.
Link, what?
I know. And, oh, wait, that's not the end of the quote. But, like, obviously he's joking that that's not how it works in the game. It's never worked that way in the game. That's more of an RPG mechanic. But the joke is that, you know, you could just tell, you could have the moviegoers pick what Link was going to say. But he does go on to say, Link does communicate to villagers all through the game. You just don't hear his voice. And that's very true. Like, that's something that you see plenty of times in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. Because, yep. For example, at one point in Tears of the Kingdom, Pura is asking you to go do something, and you see Link's body, like, moving and gesturing. Was it gestating? That's not right. I mean, he could have been. I mean, I did just give him a meal. I got to restore those hearts. But
Link's got to play those charades.
Yeah, exactly. He's like Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Okay, actually, now I want to see that crossover. No? Yes.
By the way, I actually met his voice actor at C2E2.
That's great.
Yeah, he was also at New York Comic Con as well one time. Yeah.
He was a nice guy. Anyway, but no, he did talk to Pierre. Like, you see him gesturing and talking, and then she goes, "What? You already did that?" I was like, "Yeah." So he does talk. It's just we never hear his voice outside the shouts or the screams. So I guess this means he could talk in the game, I guess. Or the movie, I guess. I don't know.
So they just left it intentionally vague by answering it.
He just left it to. Well, I think it's kind of like what Jeff Fowler was trying to do with Shadow the Hedgehog, and like, we're not going to tell you who he sounds like or who's going to play him because he wants you to go into the movie with the mystery. I would not be surprised if they played that direction with this one, especially after the Chris Pratt backlash, which is still valid, by the way. Faith. You know what you've done. But yeah, they're probably not going to... They're going to frame it to where all the other characters talk and you don't hear Link until the movie. So whether he talks a lot or talks a little, you won't be taken aback by his voice from the trailers. So, yeah. Yes, I know it clearly didn't affect the movie enough to not make $1 billion. But as we all know, Jack Black heals all wounds. He did a cover of a Britney Spears song. It's actually really good.
Yeah.
He did. They played it at the con I was at 2 weeks ago, and it was just like, it's really good, actually. So, Jack Black, everybody. We're not going to know for a while. Just going to have to roll with it. Remember, once he's done with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, that's the next movie he's making. So, be ready. Be ready. All right, next up. Okay. Next up is the funny story of the week. And by funny, I mean child endangerment.
Yes, sounds about right.
This is real. So check it out. If you didn't know, and it's okay if you didn't, I didn't know this. There are real world Mario Karts that you can buy for your kids. How did I not know this? How did I not buy one and pimp it out so I could ride this monstrosity? But yes, it is a electric kart racer. It goes 8 miles per hour, so you know, kid speed. And it has rear drifting wheels. It has the Mario Kart sounds. It may or may not come with the helmet. The helmet is on the box art. I can't confirm that it comes with the helmet, so you might need to give one to your kids on your own. And apparently, they had a bit of a problem. What problem was that, Todd? Well, they had to recall all the models. Why would that have to happen, Todd? Well, that would be because a law firm gave them data, let's just call it, about the issue with the cart, which was specifically there were 65 incidents of debris-clogged pedals sticking, of which 15 of the vehicles crashed into permanent structures with one minor injury. If you're confused, that means that they couldn't get the pedals from stop being stuck. And when you have an accelerator stuck and you're a kid who doesn't know actually how to drive, you're not getting that car to stop until you run into something.
Nope.
Yep. Newton's law will take effect for you.
This is real. This is real. But yeah. This is hilarious in all the ways that matter. Because I'm just picturing these kids going 8 miles an hour and screaming like they're going 1,000. You know?
Like, wow! I can't stop this thing!
And they're just like watching, like, slowly chug along. Yes, I know 8 miles per hour is technically fast in context, but you know, you can run and catch up to it. That's the point. These are kids. These are kids' carts. All right.
Yeah, and
children.
And again, these things is from Jack Specific. Yes, yeah, so yeah, take note of that. A 24-foot ride-on racer cart.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, like you didn't think you. I know kids' quality toys has come a long way since, like, I know back in my day with just the usual pedals and all that. Remember back when we were kids when we had those pedal bikes? I don't know, but no, they have like we had to charge batteries, like these power wheels. Remember those times? Jeez.
Oh, jeez.
yeah, make you feel old. And yeah, like, oh, like now you get these days, but oh, you haven't did any QA testing in regard to possible debris stucking the accelerator. Like, jeez. You want to protect our kids? Please, I think you're trying to do something else entirely.
So I just want to note that I can just see the kids getting in the cart and then the pedals sticking in, then going, it's me, Mario!
Yeah, you remember we were going to that Illumination movies for LH Star Film, like, Illumination!
Yeah. So, yeah, that happened. That happened, ladies and gentlemen. These are the stories that make your week worthwhile. And remember, only one kid got hurt. And you want to know what he hurt? He broke his neck. I'm joking. Joking. All right. It was, he had a chafed hand. That's it.
Basically the equivalent of a rash.
Pretty much. And but the best thing of all was the first comment. And the first comment on the Twitter post that had this was, wow, the Mario Kart got recalled for the same reason as the Tesla Cybertruck.
One is more dangerous than the other.
Yes, clearly it's the Mario Kart. Oh boy. So, yeah, These are the days. These are the days that make life all worthwhile. If you think you're having a bad day, just think about the Mario Kart kids going 8 miles per hour with stuck pedals trying not to crash. It's wrong that I'm laughing, and yet it's funny. Deal with it, okay?
Okay, I'm sure people are going to be adding having a Mario Kart on their bucket list now.
Yes. As a certain tool man says, it needs more power. All right. Let's move on before we get called upon by Child Protective Services. So from a Nintendo recall to a Nintendo cease and desist, a great transition. I'm on fire today. Do you remember the Yuzu emulator?
Yep.
Yeah. Remember how Nintendo took that down with Veracity? There's a word. Veracity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they did it again. Because I'm pretty sure one of you two said earlier, there were going to be clones of the Yuzu. Someone was just going to take what they did and do it to make more clones.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
You would be right.
Yep.
What you probably didn't guess, however, was that Nintendo decided to take all of these clones down in one shot. And by all, I mean 8,535 clones with a single DMCA.
All the GitHub.
And I'm pretty sure they're probably missing about like 11,000 more behind it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure there's private repositories that probably are, I'd say, quote unquote, safe. But I feel like they may be playing with fire if they keep the name as Yuzu.
Yeah. So Nintendo don't play around, ladies and gentlemen. Not when it comes to this.
Yeah. No.
If you try it, they're gonna get you. And there's nothing you can do about it because they have the legal right to shut it down.
Yes,
they now own the Yuzu name too. So good luck, everyone trying to claim to be a Yuzu clone.
I remember Nintendo ninjas are real, so please do not take them lightly.
So, yeah, just when you thought that Nintendo wasn't gonna do something even more against these emulators, you were wrong. They will never stop. They will never stop looking. They will never stop looking. All right. Next up, let's see what we got. Okay, this is one that it's funny, stupid. Like, I'm trying to do a lot of these stories tonight. It has to do with Baldur's Gate 3. But Todd, that's a great game. I agree. It was a game. It was the game of the year winner. Well, for some people, for the rest of us, it was actually Tears of the Kingdom. But I digress. Only IGN, I think, did that. But still, they actually just Baldur's Gate actually just won the sweep of the five main awards for Game of the Year from the five main industry people. So that was actually pretty cool. But yeah, Hasbro's head of digital product development, Dan Ayoub, talked about the game and why he felt gamers resonated with it. Now, there's a lot of things he could have said there, okay? But it's what he said that sends me over the river. Okay, quote, "One of the great things we took from the success of Baldur's Gate 3 is people really, really like a great, well-executed D&D game. For the company and for myself, that was an excellent example of execution of the brand in an authentic way. And the players came. They loved it and are asking for more. And I think you can see that with other brands as well." End quote. To which I say, quote, "You think?" Like, seriously, we've talked about this so many times on the podcast. If you make a quality game, people are likely going to come to it. Now, this obviously is not always the rule. There are plenty of games that had, let's call them, underwhelming sales. World ends with you! And so on and so forth. But him saying, like, oh, it's so weird. It's fantastic to see that people wanted a well-executed, authentic D&D game. Yeah, because what's their other option? You want a bad D&D game? You want one that's only kind of D&D? Like, what are we saying here? Like, hey, the game was good and it sold well. That's such a shock. Not really. Like, what is this? Like, seriously.
D&D is a popular thing. So if you do a game well, based on the premise of D&D with the world and how the mechanics work and just the freedom and creativity, you're bound to, you know, have a good game.
Yeah, again, what is with out-of-touch developers these days? Like, I don't know, make a complete game, make something quality. It doesn't have to be perfect, it just has to be fun. Again, Reggie Fils-Aimé's amazing old philosophy of Nintendo. Like, yeah, make the game. If it isn't fun, why bother? And apparently fun is a foreign concept for video games, huh?
I don't know. I mean, you could, now, on a certain level, you could argue that he said this because Hasbro has not had this kind of a gaming success in the past. Like, can you think of another, like, Hasbro game that had this kind of, you know, fan and critical praise? I certainly can't.
I mean, the only thing I know about from Hasbro is that Walkman from Home Alone 2. That's the only thing I can remember.
That's a very interesting reference, Will, but I digress. So, when you think about it, this could be them saying, like, you know, we just didn't, you know, think about how this could resonate with people if it was done right. And for the record, this is not the only D&D video game out there. Right? Uh-huh. There's Neverwinter Nights, there's a whole bunch of others. But this was the one that set the tone because it was great, it was authentic, and it felt like a D&D game that everyone could play no matter their experience level. I'm the perfect example of that. I had minimal D&D experiments? I mean, technically that's accurate. it technically works, but I love Baldur's Gate 3, and not just because of Karlach, but mostly because of Karlach. I am nothing if not honest about my feelings. So, you know, like, I loved it, and I would love to see a Baldur's Gate 4 whenever it arrives. And they even said that they're not rushing to replace Larian Studios because they want to make sure that the follow-up, whatever it is, matches the greatness of Baldur's Gate 3. And I respect that. But for them to say, oh, yeah, it was a great game, and people came to it and enjoyed it, it's just like, you're new here, aren't you? or what's that a James Franco meme? First time? I mean, yeah. Just stop, please. Next thing you know, Todd Howard will say that the only reason Starfield failed was because it was too different from our other games. Oh, wait.
Nah.
Yeah. He said that, by the way, and I'm like, Todd, stop disgracing the family name. Again, you had one job. All right, next up, we're almost there. Okay, this is a story of 2 days, Monday and Thursday. On Monday, the Knuckles TV show, which debuted last weekend on Paramount Plus, dropped the entire first episode for people to watch on YouTube. We even have the link up on the Outer Haven site, so you can go watch it right now if you desire. Not right now, because you'll do a really epic podcast.
After the podcast.
You know.
Keep it bookmarked.
I mean, I don't know if you've been told this, but I'm told I have as great a voice as Idris Elba. You know, I know the effect I have on women, you know. There's so many jokes I could say about myself here, but I will not, because I don't want to, you know, depress myself further. But the first episode was there. And so I wrote in my article talking about this, and I said, it's odd that they're doing this right after the premiere weekend, and I wonder if this means it's not doing well, like, stat-wise. 4 days later, I was wrong. Because not only was it the most watched original program on Paramount Plus, not only was it the most watched kids show on Paramount Plus, not only did it boost the other Sonic shows on Paramount Plus by 267%, it clocked in over 4 million hours of views, combined, obviously, across the first 3-day weekend.
Oh.
Yep.
Now, before you say anything, yes, I know that 4 million isn't a lot compared to, say, oh, I don't know, Disney Plus or Netflix, you know, which gets, like, you know, dozens upon dozens of hours. But remember, this is Paramount Plus. Okay. Where the best thing about them is their Star Trek shows and their Paramount Mountain commercials. They're really good. Like, seriously, they just are. Like the one where Picard is throwing Arnold. So great. Oh, and Creed's here. Okay. Shut up, Barrymore. there are 4 lights. But yeah, love those commercials. So yeah, Knuckles is doing really well. which proves once again that even if a show isn't really liked or isn't the best quality, sometimes people will just watch it.
Yeah. Like I definitely got to see what the hubbub was about. Like even, and from what I've heard from like a very diehard Sonics fan, like from what I've heard, it's basically it's fine. I mean, yes, Knuckles doesn't show up as much, even though it is in the title show itself. But like, it's there is definitely plenty of Easter eggs for any Sonic fans that would definitely enjoy. So it's fine. It's fine.
And if you were part of the 4 million, congratulations, you're a part of history. Also, I kid you not, I just came across a tweet that said Sony has made an offer to buy out Paramount.
Sony, Sonic the Hedgehog. movies, of course.
I mean, think about it. If they had Sonic and The Last of Us, they could say, we're the team behind, we're the ones who've been, you know, making the video game live action empire work. That was us. I know, it's a lie. I'm just saying, like Sony wouldn't lie. I mean, come on. I mean, you know that Microsoft and a certain Phil Spencer would. Just saying, Phil. It's been a while since I've done a Phil insult, so I felt the need to get back in there. It's like, yeah, how are your live action movies doing, Phil? I don't think you've had any, Phil. Have they? Oh, wait, Halo.
Fallout.
Halo. Yeah.
Halo, not so much good.
We don't talk Fallout about, was good. We don't talk about Bruno or Halo. Yeah, how'd that work out for you, Hotshot? Yeah. And that was on Paramount Plus, too. We didn't hear about that one breaking any records. No, it was emphatically Knuckles. So Knuckles is canonically better than Master Chief. You're welcome. That's probably more real than I realize.
Don't get Knuckles angry.
I was gonna say, like, Knuckles is definitely better. I mean, first of all, Idris Elba. Okay. Second of all, been around for decades. Arguably better than Sonic. I know Tyler would be mad at me about that, but I've always been a Knuckles fan. I have always been a Knuckles fan. I've always liked him more than Sonic, and this is just true. So yeah, I like that his series did so much better than Halo. Makes me smile just thinking about Phil suffering. Moving on. Alright, really quick one. Monolith Soft is currently hiring programmers for the next AAA title. There were no hints as to what the title would be, but more than likely is going to be the next Xenoblade Chronicles game, or, I don't know, a Xenoblade Chronicles export. I have to dream.
What even is?
Yeah. Lots of trees have been dying recently, but I don't want this to be one of them, all right? So, just say. Hopefully this means we'll get more information on them. Let's be generous. 2025 will probably be a good time for the next game. I mean, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 was 2017. Then 3 was 2022, and then Future Redeemed was last year. So yeah, I could see it. I could see it. They can make it work.
Man,
I mean, we know that they know how to make great games.
Like, oh yeah, I mean,
my gosh. So, finally, and this one's, I'm gonna say this one's for the kids in the right way. Do you guys know what Hoopla is?
Yes, and the dramas, all that, yada yada, the Hoopla.
Yeah. Also, that's technically a Pokemon name. Actually, it's actually Hoopa.
It's Hoppip.
No, it's Hoopa. Hoppip is the grass type. You don't remember the movie, the Hoopla movie?
Never. I probably didn't.
I'll put it in our Discord. Anyway. Yeah, it's Hoopa. Hoopa is a legendary Pokemon. It can create the rings. It has like a sonic ring,
yes.
And it can go through dimensions.
Anyway,
see, I know my lore, William. But Hoopla, the library streaming service. See, even libraries have a streaming service. What is this world that we live
in? Taking over everything.
It's taking over. And now
it's going to be the real apocalypse.
Yeah, and yet Disney Plus wants to make channels. We already have that. Don't you have, like, 3 Disney Channel networks?
Yeah, don't they, like, Disney, Disney XD, and Disney Junior?
Gods. Hoopla has announced that they have made a special deal with the Pokemon Company. What kind of deal is that, I wonder? They have agreed to get seasons, I believe it is 6 through 13 of the anime, and bring it onto their service. For those who don't know, the 6 through 13 is the entirety of both Hoenn and Sinnoh.
Okay.
So that's two, and I looked it up because I had to write for another site. That is a lot of great Pokemon. Like Hoenn and Sinnoh were great series.
Yes.
All right, some of the best characters, great battles. Ash wasn't an idiot yet. Unova ruined so many things for me. Like, just saying. And so, I'm excited for that. And so, if you have a library card and you are able to access Hoopla via their servers, go watch Pokemon. Please. Watch the good stuff, unlike Pokemon Horizons. I know it's a little hard to judge something that's only had, you know, 10 episodes or so. Do I think it'll get better? I don't know! I'm never going to let that go. I'm never going to let that go. Like, there is a writer's crisis going on in Hollywood right now, and all I could think of is, like, I would so write this better. And I know that's mean. And I know that's mean to everyone who actually wrote those episodes, but, like, I'm sorry. It's just... And then I see people praising it. I'm like, how?! That's like people who praise Thor, Love, and Thunder. Stop it! Get some help! Oh, if you want to talk about get some help, I know this will make Tyler probably reappear from the Shatterverse. I saw someone say that LeBron James' popularity is bigger than Michael Jordan's, and I'm like,
what?
What is wrong with you people? First of all, Michael Jordan was in a good Space Jam movie.
Yes.
I mean, where's the lie? Dang it, LeBron. Also, how's the playoffs treating you? Oh, wait! So, saying Jordan didn't lose in the playoffs this year. Jordan didn't play in the playoffs this year. Exactly. Anyway. Go watch Pokemon. It's good stuff. Trust me, if I had access to those episodes, I would binge it. Just to remember, because there were some really great episodes in Hoenn and Sinnoh. Great, good times. And dang, I feel old! Like, that was season 6 through 13? Like, that's... Okay, so let's see. That was four. So Unova, Kalos, Alola, technically Galar. So that's four other regions after that. So that'd be like, what, series 30? Gods, I gotta look that up now.
Oh my gosh.
I know, right? How many seasons of Pokemon are there? There are 25, apparently. Seems a little bit low, but I'll take it for now. But yeah, 25 seasons of Pokemon. Oh, that's as of 2022. So it's probably 26 now if you add the Ash one. You know, the terrible epilogue series. Again, I could have written that better. Dang it, I could have written that better. Then 27, I'm going to say, is Horizon. So 27 seasons. You know, and by seasons, we mean like, you know, 20 to 40, 50 episodes apiece.
Yeah.
You know, like how seasons actually should be, television writers. So, good times. God, I feel old. You are old, Todd. Shut up. All right. And now we're going to get into our main event, because just when you thought we weren't going to go back to any serious topics like, you know, the end of the world or kids crashing into things at 8 miles per hour. I'm sorry. That's just still a funny visual. I'm sorry. And just for the record, I'm a single guy without kids, so I can make fun of kids all I desire. It's so easy. But we are going to talk about something that actually one of our co-hosts on the Outer Haven brought up in Discord, had very passionate feelings about. And the question is, do the quote-unquote hardcore gaming audience truly understand the changes that are going on in the gaming industry? And do they get that, how did he phrase it? Like, it's bad or it's good or it's never going to be the same or something like that. It was a very long conversation, so I might have missed the opening salvo, if you will. It really got heated, like, seriously. But we will discuss the state of the industry in a Nintendo discussion. All right, so let's start with this topic by phrasing it like this. Does the hardcore gaming industry understand that the industry right now is in a serious flux state?
Part of me is basically saying, my initial reaction to that question is like, no. Like, I feel like there's you always have those that one part of like the hardcore gamers, like all that developers, whoever it may be, that there will always be that side that, like, unfortunately will never understand, like, very out of touch anything. I mean, that could be said for any part of life, if anything else, in society, to say the least. It's not just simply in video games as well. And like, I just can't help but feel like there will always be that natural discourse. And of course, naturally, some of our colleagues here in the Outer Haven, again, the tribalism, just like the lack of understanding. Like, unfortunately, there is definitely plenty of like dividing factors of like why, like, that side of the industry just simply just won't hear it, doesn't get it, or like no sense of understanding, compassion, whatever reason may be. And regarding to the changes in the world, there's just plenty of reasons why it could. It's like that. It's just simply as that. I feel like that's just my initial reaction at the moment, right now, to that question.
Scott,
yeah, my opinion is similar to Will's. I do think that it depends also on the definition of hardcore gamers, because there's the hardcore gamers of those who just play the games they like.
Mm-mm.
And there's the hardcore gamers of those who basically spend most of their time on social media, basically doing gaming discourse.
right. Like, so
people who are just playing the games they like don't really see much of a change in the industry, because they basically are just looking towards the games they like. There's a huge amount of people in the gaming sphere who basically just wait for the same like three games every year and just play those games until the next one comes out the next year.
Right. Like the Call of Duties, like the WWE 2K games and all that. Like, you see these people just like within their own bubbles and tribalism, regarding to their own, they just play with the same game no matter what. I mean, again, 2K's, barely any changes, but they continue to pump it out no matter what. Yep. And then there'll be like those people, like, of course, heck, even with the whole Stutter Blade discourse back when it first introduced it, like, yeah, people were like, yeah, that's another discourse in itself. Like, but heck, in the end, the game was so much fun that Korea is actually probably interested in investing in the gaming market now, thanks to Lies of P and now Stutter Blade. So, like, it's just so interesting, if anything else, that, like, the hardcore, like, there, of course, there'll be those toxic of any kind of fandom. And, like, if they want to sow their discourse, by all means, like, again, don't feed. I personally feel, again, with the old saying goes, don't feed the trolls. And just, like, Twitter, whatever social media, whatever it may be, that it always been a very, like, yeah, just don't forget about them. Like, internet has made our access of anonymous feedback and not suffering any consequences. Like that one Mike Tyson saying goes, like social media has basically make us weak and makes us like we can do whatever we want without the concussion of being punched in the face. That old saying. So yeah,
if you look at like the Twitter discourses surrounding like the game industry as a whole, everything gets exaggerated off the wazoo, no matter what is going on, and everybody takes it as their own kind of a deal. So that's another thing why I don't think necessarily that the gaming industry, I guess, for the hardcore gamers, sees the change coming, because what they see coming, I think, is a very highly exaggerated thing that they're putting in their head of just like everything's gonna change, everything's gonna do this without realizing like there can be certain shifts of direction and where the gaming industry is gonna go regarding so many different platforms, whether it be Nintendo, Xbox, or PlayStation, or even PC. But it's not gonna be one of those everybody's gonna lose kind of a deal that everyone wants it to be.
Right, like people want conflict, and it just kind of go again. History repeats itself, unfortunately. Like, always want. Remember again, like the whole motion control age of the game industry when everyone's trying to copy the Wii. Like, and they oh no! Like they're gonna do that, the Kinect, the whole PlayStation Move, and all that, and that barely left the ground. Only Wii was only managed to go and pull it off. No, decently, no problem.
Yeah, PlayStation got rid of the Move really fast, and the Kinect kind of made Xbox 360 hurt a lot.
Yep.
Remember, because it came with the Xbox One at launch. Like,
It hurt. I mean, it basically destroyed the Xbox One. I said it hurt Xbox 360 in the long run.
So yeah, like it kind of goes back to it. It's like people want discourse. They want they always want to one-up each other instead of the usual the simple concept. Like, look. The world is big enough that we can exist. Like, just play the games you want. And if there's more games that are more successful, by all means, lift each other up. It's like, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure, you probably checked on Subtle Blade's Twitter account. Insomniac Games actually gave their respects to Subtle Blade of their releases, as well as other developers, including the developers of Atomic Heart. Yeah, you remember Atomic Heart with regard to those horny robots? they gave props to that game, and they respected Stellar Blade's dev team. It's just that's generally what a lot of people want to see. Like, look, the world's big enough; they can exist. And if there's two good games out in the world, there's two games good guys in the world. One of them doesn't have to be better than the other. Like, sure, we can critique each other and all that, but in the end, we have two games existing in this world, which is a win for us gamers. But apparently people just can't see that.
Yeah. All right, getting back to the original topic, I want to circle back to what Scott said.
Okay.
Original thought was, what defines a hardcore gamer? Because when I think of hardcore gamers, I think about us.
Yeah.
We proud Nintendo kings and queens, whatever she shows up, Faith. Whenever you decide to return to work, Faith. She's busy, don't worry. I can tell you what she's been busy with, but she would get so embarrassed. So naturally, I will tell you right now. No, I'm kidding. But,
Pokemon.
I am that big brother. I would tell this embarrassing story, but I will not. But I think of us because it's our job to know what is going on. And so over the last 4 months, yes, we are over 4 months into 2024 somehow. I've had to read and look at story after story after story about the layoffs, the Embracer Group nonsense that's been going on there. I just saw that Take-Two is apparently going to shutter some of their studios.
Yep.
And that's Take-Two. That's one of the most successful people.
Whole Roller Dome.
Exactly. And you see games that, and then of course there's the whole Todd Howard thing where it's he's not getting why Starfield sucked. And yes, I still maintain Starfield sucked. In fact, it sucked so much that I had to do for another website a list of the best Xbox exclusives ever. And my boss put Starfield on there, and he put in parentheses, "Yes, Todd, I know, but updates and DLC could make it better in the future." And I go, "You lie." anyway, but for us, the news journalists and the fans have their finger on the pulse of the industry because it's interesting to them. We are the hardcore gamers, I see those who say I play 1 to 3 the series. I feel they're more loyalists, like how I was in the beginning when I only played Nintendo titles, because that's all I knew. I knew Nintendo. That's why I had the SNES and the N64, and then I found out there was this game called Digimon World 3 on PlayStation. I'm like, I want to play that. So I bought a PlayStation just for that game. Then I got the other two Digimon World games. They were awesome. Digimon World 4, not so much. Anyway, how do you screw up Digimon World? And then I expanded my reach. And yes, I occasionally played Xbox mainly because my friends had it. I never owned an Xbox, and I never will, Phil Spencer. I never will. And then PC gaming has become such a big part of my life, especially in the last few years when Keith, our boss at Outer Haven, got me a PC so that I could, not have a broken one. Such a nice concept. And that allowed me to replay the Arkham games. That allowed me to play Persona 3 Reload when we got the code from Atlas. It allowed me to play The Last of Us Part 1, and so I could finally experience the great Naughty Dog game. There's loyalty, and then there's being a hardcore gamer. And when I think of those who, gaming is their true lives, they want to do gaming as much as possible. They want to be a part of the industry. That's what I feel as a hardcore gamer. And to that end, I feel we are seeing the change in the industry because we're seeing everything go wrong all the time.
Yeah.
There's the layoffs. That's just the easy one. Then you're seeing so many publishers try and fail to make these big expansive games and then they're not selling as much and they wonder why, or they get like big buzz at the beginning and then they fail off, or they fall off Starfield and everything, or even Pal World. I mean, we haven't talked about Pal World in weeks. I mean, yes, it had that big rush at the beginning, but is it still doing that consistently? I honestly don't know. So that's what I feel about that, is that we are the hardcore gamers because we're the ones with the pulse in the industry and we're seeing how things go wrong. You know, like they were talking about last week with Square Enix and how Final Fantasy Rebirth is apparently selling 50% of what Remake did. 50%. And that game sold like 2.4 million in its first month. So that means it barely sold over a million units on PS5. Which has
the sales on PS5 are actually at 2.2 million right now. But
okay.
That was first week sales. That was it. Sorry.
Yeah.
For Remake, first week sales was like 2.4 million. So yeah. But still, 2.2 million for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth after all those hypes, all those epic trailers and everything, that's really small. And of course, that definitely doesn't cover the budget that was taken to make this game, no doubt.
Yeah, the problem too with that number is it's not necessarily sales as much as how many people played the game.
Boom.
So it could be even more than that too, but yeah. Square, as well as most places, have been kind of, I don't know, they haven't been saying the actual sales numbers, but they have ranked it really high in sales.
Yeah.
When you look at the charts and the graphs.
Yeah, and yet
Square Enix just recently said that they suffered like $140 million loss in the last fiscal year, and they're having to be more strict with their gaming policy or whatever. They even like canned some unannounced projects because they're trying to be stricter with how they develop games and like what ones to develop. And like that's what we're going to be seeing for a while now, I fear. Outside of Nintendo, ironically enough. Or not so ironically enough, because Nintendo knows how to make games. Outside of Luminous Ocean. Or Endless Ocean Luminous, of course. You get one bad title. Okay, or how about Everybody 1-2 Switch? There's your bad title. Yeah. When you have like one bad game every like 5 years, I think you're doing all right. I'm just saying.
Right. You can't have winners, right? Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So I definitely feel like we're seeing the change in the industry because we are constantly watching it and trying to see where things are going. And right now it doesn't look that great. But to the more casual person, like say me before I got into the video game journalism business, I might have occasionally looked at the industry news reports, like, oh, Nintendo is, you know, restructuring their QA testers in Seattle. We had that story like a month ago. Or, you know, Sony has laid off 900 workers. Oh, that's terrible. And then I would have moved on.
Yeah.
Because that didn't matter to me. As sad as it sounds, obviously. Or the big, if I wasn't where I was right now, the biggest story that would have hit me was the shutdown of Volition. And that's because I worked there. And like, I still kind of dreamed of going back there one day, you know, triumphantly after being emphatically wronged by that company, but that's water under the now buried bridge. So, but like that would have been the big one because that was my company that I worked at. I was there for Saints Row 3, its best game, period. And so that would have sucked, but that wouldn't have said like, oh, this is a sign of the industry's in decline. I would have just said, oh, I guess they had a stroke of bad luck and they just couldn't recover from it, which has happened to plenty of game developers over the years without tying to the overall industry. So it really just, to go to the original question, is the hardcore gaming audience noticing the industry change? Depends on how you define it. There are plenty who don't know, or to be honest, don't care.
Yes. Yeah.
They're worried solely about their next gaming experience, whether it be Nintendo, Microsoft, or Sony. That's just how gaming works sometimes. And that's not a bad mindset if the industry is that, for lack of a better word, surface level for you. If it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. That's just how it works. So that's okay. But for those in the industry who are seeing these flaws, who are seeing these issues, who are seeing the monstrous moves by men named Geoff Keighley and Phil Spencer, you know what you've done. You know what you've done. We do notice.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
That brings us to the second half of the question is, do we feel that these changes are going to keep going this way, or are they going to balance out?
I personally believe they're going to balance out. If history is any track record of anything else, like, we've come from one mistake to another, and sometimes I feel, if anything else, like, nature, things will balance itself out. Like, if it's going to take another gaming crash, like, to basically, like, set everything straight, like, again, everything going back to zero in the gaming industry, then, yeah, let it happen, and then we'll see if gaming industry can be reborn after that, I feel like. But, yeah, there's definitely that cycle that, yes, we head into a good part, and then after that we head to a bad part, and just like somehow it definitely goes in a cycle. So I feel like it can probably even itself out, but I'm not holding my breath too hard on that one.
Yeah, I agree that's going to be more balancing, especially because we saw such a huge ballooning in the industry after the whole pandemic and isolation and quarantine everything, and what we are seeing is kind of a result from that. So I think the industry itself will start to balance out. I don't think it's going to be a doom and gloom. The gaming industry is dead. Everyone's going to lose. That a lot of people think it is.
Yeah. In the words of Hawkeye, don't give me hope. Or how about Scully? I want to believe. Look, I don't want to be doom and gloom, even though we've talked about the apocalypse multiple times today. And drowning multiple times. Thanks, Scott. But this is one of those things where it could absolutely get worse before it gets better. Mm-hmm. And that's just because of history. Because, again, 2023 had 10,000 layoffs within the gaming industry. We're 4 months in, and we're probably already there. If not above. And more are definitely coming. And then when you hear about the reports from, like, Square Enix, where they said, when they said in their financial report, they said recognition of acknowledgement of catastrophic losses or something like that. I'll find the document later, but they were like, yeah, we took a huge loss in this past year, and that past year was when they had two mainline Final Fantasy titles, 16 and Rebirth.
Yep. You know,
two very hyped games, and they're like, yeah, we took a loss even with those games coming out. All right, if they had like a slower year where like their biggest release was the remaster of Star Ocean Second Story, that's one thing. Hey, we had the down year because we didn't have a big year like before. That happens. That's the industry.
Mm-mm.
All right. Like in 2024 with the Switch, where so far the biggest game is in Princess Peach Showtime. I'm just saying. Yes, I know Mario's coming out in a few weeks. We're all excited. Trust me.
Peach got one of the quarters.
Yeah, Peach got one of the quarters. But things have to change on multiple levels. In my mind, to things to balance out. The first thing is that the gaming heads, your Todd Howards, your Phil Spencers, who's running Sony now? Because Jim's gone. It doesn't matter. But the head of Sony, it doesn't matter really. This head of Sony, they need to realize, like, hey, we could keep pushing for these games to have big worlds and cost a heck of a lot of money to make and hope that they sell well, or we could, you know, be a little bit more reserved and just make quality games that will likely sell well as long as we promote them well, or that's with you. And then go from there. Not everything needs to be a super massive world with tons of quests, the best graphics possible, and, you know, other things that just rack up the budget. That's what causes problems, not solutions. And because even when you look at Nintendo, you're like, yes, we had Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, and even Super Mario Odyssey to a lesser extent. But we also had, you know, Princess Peach Showtime. We had a couple Fire Emblem games, which were not open world. They were just straight up RPGs. We had multiple Kirby titles. Not the biggest games there, but they were fun, and they sold well. They sold very well. There's Kirby games that sold better than Final Fantasy Rebirth.
True.
And Starfield, I'm pretty sure. Okay, don't hold me to Starfield thing, because I had the Xbox Game Pass thing, so I might skew the numbers. You get one, Phil. You get one. And even then, it's more like a half. But, you know, they balanced it to where, like, not everything was massively open world, because they knew that wouldn't sell every single time. Not to mention, it took so long to make Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom that you almost wondered if they would be good upon launch. But they were, because Nintendo took the time. they took the time, they made the quality, and then they released it, which is something we're sadly not seeing with every publisher. When they do, it works out. When they don't, you get Redfall. Yeah, right back at you, Phil. See, I gave you praise. And I took it away. I remember that was a game where they were hoping Microsoft would intervene, but they're like, "Nah, you'll do fine." No.
That's when the people are drowning, trying to like have their hand up, and then Phil just gives them a head high five and is like, "Keep going."
That's right. You got this. I believe in you. So, and then of course there's the evilness that is the Embracer Group. Because, and let's be honest, it's not just the Embracer Group, okay? It's others like Sony, like Microsoft, who are just buying up these companies and thinking, oh, we're going to have an empire of first-party titles now at our beck and call. And then they, like with a Redfall, they don't care about the quality because they think, oh, the name enough will sell it.
Yeah.
No, it won't. Case in point, how many of you actually knew about Larian Studios before Baldur's Gate? The correct answer here is those who played Divinity Original Sin.
Right.
And for the record, I knew about those games. I didn't know that Larian was the one behind them. But now everyone knows Larian because Baldur's Gate.
Yep.
A game that was in early access 4 years and took the time, did it right, perfected Karlach, and then released. Okay, well, I'm going to deduct a point there because her original ending in the game was most definitely not perfect. So they like added more endings.
Yeah.
But like when the worst thing is the ending, I mean, that is pretty bad, I suppose. But still, game of the year, ladies and gentlemen. I think that there is absolute room for course correction, for balance. All right, without wiping out half the gaming industry.
Looking at you, Embracer Group.
Yeah, that was a Thanos joke, by the way. Like, you know, snapping. But I absolutely fear what could happen next because there are still so many people who will look at, oh, this is all about making money. We need to make the most profit possible. No, it's about making the best games and then getting the most profit possible from them. That's how it used to work. It was not about, hey, I'm making the next Zelda game because I want to make a bunch of money. It was, no, we're making the next Zelda game because we wanted to do even better than the last one. Or we want to do a spin-off of this one about masks. Or, hey, let's put a special Capcom series of them for the Game Boy Colors. Or, hey, why don't we finally go do an open-world Zelda game and make it really, really good? You never hear them say, we're doing this for the money.
No.
And if they do, they are really good at hiding it. All right? And then remember, when Nintendo was in a bad way, what did Satoru Iwata do? He cut his own paycheck to ensure he didn't lay people off because he knew that the team was more important than the profits and the money he was making.
Yes.
Which is not something we're seeing with so many other companies.
No.
Especially the Embracer Group. Dicks. So, again, it's somber, it's depressing, I grant you. But sadly, this is the state I feel we're in the industry right now. You know, there are highs. There are good things coming. And I do believe that the Switch 2, whatever it is, could be another bright spot should Nintendo stick the landing. Which, for the record, not a guarantee.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay, like
anything's possible.
Remember, high on the Wii U, not so much.
It happened.
Let's just say... Their accelerator got stuck at much higher than 8 miles per hour when they launched the Wii. So, there is hope. There is always hope. The gaming industry has had record highs and record lows in the past. We'll mention the gaming crash of 83. That's a perfect example of that. And everyone thought gaming was done in America, and it wasn't. And here we're seeing, you know, publishers losing lots of money, doing lots of layoffs. Even indie games are struggling in certain cases because of the Kickstarter boom not being as grand as it once was.
Yeah.
You know, people are, it's getting harder to make video games on your own or in a small crew without serious capital, which you just can't get as easily anymore because of the state of the world. The entire world, not just the gaming world.
Yep.
So there is hope, but we also need to brace ourselves because, again, things might get worse before they get better. And it doesn't matter if you're a casual gamer, a hardcore loyalist, or a hardcore gamer in full, like us, journalists, you're going to notice things. Whether it's prices going up, you know, games in your favorite series not doing as well as past ones? Halo. Sorry, I have to keep dissing Phil when I can. But you have to pay attention. And to anyone who's like, anyone listening to this who says, you know, I'm a casual gamer, that's fine. I'm not asking you, and we're not asking you to, you know, have a magnifying glass, you know, and like constantly observe every article you see. You don't have to do that. But when you see something that might affect the industry, maybe give it a read. See what it says. See what you can infer about it, and see if you can connect the dots like we have over the years. There's nothing wrong with being more informed about the thing you love.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Exactly.
All right. And on that note, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. What do you feel about the state of the industry and how much of gamers in general, casual, loyalists, hardcore, actually understand what's going on and where the changes are leading? Let us know. Also, are you excited for Universal Studios Orlando? Do you want Link to talk in the Zelda movie? Are you now more tempted than ever to get one of those kids' Mario Karts and outfit it so you could drive it at more than 8 miles per hour? The answer is yes. Did you watch the Knuckles show over the weekend? And yes, what is your first gut instinct about the end of the world Splatfest we're having? Let us know in the comments below. So, for Skullgut Scott and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level. So, raise the flag.